I'm speaking today with Joe Montemayor, Democratic candidate for state representative in House District 127 up in North Harris County, Kingwood, Humble area. Joe, first question I like to ask people, why are you running for this particular office?
Well, Charles, thank you first for the interview. What happened is I was approached by Diane Troutman and members of the Harris County Party to seek the position after Diane was asked to run for a tax assessor, which I feel was the wisest move our party could have made. Diane knows that my concerns regarding our educational system and the lacking of the funding for our educational system were one of the main reasons that I decided to run. I'm frustrated with the fact, with the immense resources of our state, that we can't properly fund our schools. It's just inexcusable. So I feel that I can make a change or help make a change to make things better for my children and my grandchildren. And that's the reason I'm running.
Now, you're in Kingwood. It seems like most of the effects of Hurricane Ike that came through here were in the south of Harris County, down Clear Lake and Galveston and whatnot. Tell me what it was like up in Kingwood, and what the after effects have been.
Well, actually, I live at Crosby, but the district covers Kingwood, and it also covers Channelview, and Huffman, Barrett Station, and a little part of Baytown. And quite honestly, the effects were devastating. We have a lot of wooded areas up there. We had a lot of down trees, a lot of down power lines. Myself, I was out of power for 11 days in my home. I stayed during the storm. The frustration I felt, I think, was felt by a number of residents within my district of the lack of response from state officials. I have, to this date, no idea where Joe Crabb was during the storm. My frustration was due to the lack of response by our county officials. One of the things that really bothered me during the storm was that Ed Emmett was so busy trying to get media coverage that we had situations where FEMA pods were being distributed, but the pods were not releasing supplies until Judge Emmett okayed the supplies to be released. And in certain areas, I know that in my district, we did not receive a pod until the second or third day that they were authorized to be released, especially in Channelview, Humble, Highlands, Baytown, and Humble, which I thought was, there was a lack of leadership on all parts. And I'm sure that an investigation will be conducted. We know we've had problems with FEMA in the past, but the fact that our state legislature, Governor Perry, Judge Emmett, on a state and county level did not take actions to correct the situations immediately really disappointed me, and disappointed a lot of people in my district.
What specifically would you like to see the state legislature do to address some of these issues that you're talking about?
I think we really need to sit down and review the emergency response plan on a state level. I think we have to put politics aside on an emergency situation and get the help to the people when they need it. Not when it looks good, not when it's politically correct. What aggravated me, I guess, was prior to the storm, Congressman Pohl, which is the congressman in my district, went on television and stated that he and Judge Emmett and the Republican leadership had already met with FEMA, had everything in place to get the emergency assistance to the residents of the county once the storm passed. Okay. However, after the storm and after this lack of response, he was very critical of the leadership of his own party. Whether the frustration when it comes from one of their own leaders, on a national level, there's problems on a state level. I'd like to review our emergency response, not only not only on a county level, but also on a state level. I think it needs to be revisited. I think that we always live with the fear of a hurricane, but until one happens, again, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, okay? But we really learned a lot of lessons from this storm. We need to apply those lessons for the next one that comes through, and we need to do it in this session of the legislature.
Do you support any calls that some people have made to require the utility companies to take a more aggressive stance on things like tree trimming, or to invest more money, which they would pass on to the customers, in, you know, hardening their infrastructure against storm damage?
Well, Charles, I'm glad you brought that question up, because if memory serves me correct, about 4 years we had a rate increase in the reason in our utilities, especially our electricity bills. And one of the arguments that was passed for this rate increase was to provide necessary upgrades to the grid, to our utility system. During this storm, they said that it wasn't a fact that, yes, the storm created some havoc, but the upgrades were never implemented, or there was an impression that they were never implemented. So, yes, I'd like to go back, one, and look at our utilities commission, find out where these rate increases went to, and find out if, in fact, we need to increase it, or do we need a better accountability from our utility companies, how that money was spent. Because they came to us saying, we need to increase your rates to give you a better service in case a storm happens. Well, a storm happens. We didn't get better service. So now my question is, what happened to that funding?
Now, you're a retired person from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE.
Uh-huh.
You spent your working career in immigration. That's kind of a hot issue in state politics these days. Certain members of the legislature have made various proposals of things to do regarding immigration, although some other people say it's really a more of a federal issue. What, if anything, should the state government be doing on the immigration issue?
That is a very sensitive question for me, because I'm I spent 29 years of my career in federal service. Four of it was with the Navy, and then the rest was with ICE, now as they call. So I have perspectives from the inside. To be honest, I've been public. I've gone public before. My feelings. I strongly believe that this state does not have the revenues that would be necessary to enforce immigration law. Nor is it under our state constitution something that we should be involved with. The reason being is that there's a question of liability. There's a question of abuse. Even within agents that are trained at the Federal Academy, there is history of abuse in the agency. Not that I'm saying that our state officials would have used the system. I just feel right now there's too much liability. We send federal agents for a training course before they're even put on the street on a probationary period. The training requirement is a minimum of 18 weeks. On top of that, they serve another year on a probationary period before these agents are out actually enforcing immigration laws on their own. I don't see how we could fund our law enforcement officers properly to be trained to fulfill immigration statutes. I do support a program that we have here in Harris County right now, where they do have immigration officers at our city jails, in our county jails, interviewing individuals as they come in, as they are being charged with state charges, to see and verify their immigrant status, and removing those individuals once they complied with criminal prosecution. I think that's a very vital program. I think it's very necessary for our community. And they are very aware of the statutes that need to be complied with to implement immigration law. But again, this is funded by ICE and it is manned by ICE. So that type of system I do support. Immigration is a very, very hot issue, and you know, you have arguments on both sides of the spectrum. I just feel that with the limited resources we have in the state, we need to bring this question back on a federal level to have it properly funded on a federal level. Our coffers are limited, and we need to be smarter on how we spend our money. And right now, the forefront for me is our educational system.
All right, let's talk a little about that. As we know, in 2006, in a special session, the legislature passed the new business margins tax that ultimately is being used to partially fund property tax cut. All of that was done to comply with a Supreme Court ruling that said the property tax funding structure, which is primarily what's used to fund schools, was unconstitutional. What's been left unaddressed primarily is, you know, the funding mechanism for schools, since the business margins tax doesn't make up for the difference. So two questions. One, the margins tax has been criticized by some people as being unfair to smaller businesses and a better deal for big businesses. What's your take on that? And two, going forward, what do you want to see the legislature do to address that tax and school funding in general?
Well, the business margin tax, I agree, is very unfair. There is a huge discrepancy between a small business owner and a corporation. It needs to be reviewed. We need to step back. I've talked to people within my district. Some of them are saying they've had a 500% increase on their taxes. And the limited the percentage of profit, if a business owner is making maybe 1 or 2% profit over cost, is being wiped out by this tax, leaving him working essentially for nothing. And that does not promote an economic growth, not only for my district, but for Texas as a whole, because a majority of our state is funded by small businesses and middle businesses. So we do need to review that. As far as where do we go from here, I've made no secret. I would like to see an expansion of legalized gambling with the intent that the proceeds that we obtain from legalized gambling be spent specifically on education, for our public education and our college education. I'm sure you're aware of one problem I have. A week doesn't go by that I don't hear from young people trying to go to college. And financially, they cannot afford it because of deregulation. College tuition has gone up over 100%. And being that I just got, you know, both of my sons, you know, through school, I know, it is extremely difficult, even with college loans and grants. One of my sons has a young man, a friend of his that I'm very honored to know, he received a scholarship from Princeton. But he owes over $200,000 in school debt now. And the first 10 years of his working career is going to be spent to pay for that that education. Now, granted, Princeton is not in Texas, but just to give you a reference point of where we are, because our kids are our future. The next generation of doctors, lawyers, professionals are at risk because we cannot get tuition down to let these kids get their education.
Okay. I confess, as someone who is lives inside the loop, I don't have much of a feel for what the local issues are in a district like 127. I don't get through there very often. What's going on there that may not be on the radar of people who don't live there, but needs to be dealt with in the next legislature?
Well, the whole District 127 is unique in that it's the second largest district in Harris County. And when people...
Largest in terms of sheer size?
Sheer size. the minute people hear Kingwood, they assume, well, Kingwood, these folks are well off, you know, they have huge homes, and it's true, but the housing market has hurt the area. And on the southern end of the district, I have the other spectrum. I have Channelview. I have Barrett Station. I have Crosby. Crosby, Barrett Station is more of an agricultural center. These are folks that still raise livestock, still plant crops, and they take a big hit, you know, with our economic time. We go to Channelview. We have a lot of blue-collar workers that work at Lionel chemical plants, so they have issues about the environment, air quality. So the district as a whole is maybe just a small snapshot of our country. We have people that are middle class, maybe well off. We also have middle incomes, agricultural folks, and we have our factory workers. So when I represent this district, I have to take all these concerns. Now, I have had experience in my campaign that I've talked to people. I had a mother in Channelview tell me she's so concerned about fuel costs. She doesn't know whether to buy a gallon of milk or a gallon of gasoline. And these are questions that face. I've had people on the other spectrum up in Kingwood tell me they're concerned about school funding because they don't have a new huge source of revenue such as a mall or a chemical plant to fund the school district in Kingwood. And they're facing a $26 million deficit to fund their schools. And they're facing a property tax hike this November. So these are issues that I face there. Crosby, my agricultural area, their concerns are health insurance. These folks are people that work the land, and they're trying to get by, they're trying to do what's right. So health insurance is really an important factor for them. Most of the district that I talk to everyone, and without fail, they ask me about the CHIPS program. If I'm for or against it, and I'm for CHIPS. I believe that we need to ensure that our children have insurance at the very minimum. And so when we talk about the district, it's a unique district in the sense that we have the spectrum or a snapshot of our country. And a representative for that district has to realize that. You have to represent the whole district. Now, my opponent, Joe Crabb, has been the incumbent for a number of years. And I've gone publicly and quite realistically, his approach to being a public servant and mine are different. His approach is, I don't have to listen to you. If you're out in my reception area, I'm not going to go out and talk to you. I'll send an assistant. I don't believe in that. I've been a public servant for 29 years. I'm here to serve my district. I'm here to serve my constituency. They may not like the answers I have for them, but I'm willing to listen, and I'm willing to address their concerns. All during this campaign, I've let everyone know I'm one vote in the House, okay? And that vote will be heard. I'm good at asking why, and I'm good at not saying or not backing down on an issue I feel strongly on.
Now, your district, of course, is a pretty strongly Republican one. Diane Troutman got 40% of the vote in 2006, and that was, you know, she performed a lot better than any other Democrat on the ballot. You know, in many places in Harris County and in the county itself, the issue is largely making sure enough Democrats get out to vote. In your district, you know, the straight ticket Republican vote, it was a lot bigger than the straight ticket Democratic vote, and you've got to change minds. How do you approach that?
Well, I think we've been very fortunate. In this district, our primaries numbers were amazing. We had 17,000 people vote. I think in past primaries, they were lucky to get 2,000 out. So we have 17,000 days. Now, out of that 17,000, 10,000 actually went down and found my name. They heard my message. So the problem is I had such a short time in the primary because I was asked to run at the end of December, so I just made the filing date, so I had no real time to get out and touch base with the district. Since then, we've been out not only block walking, but trying to obtain enough functions we've gotten on the web, we've tried to get our message out there. But on top of that, I've also had a blessing in that Diane Troutman's 100% behind me. Every function that we've done together, she's wholeheartedly supported my campaign. We've tried to let our message be known that we're about the children of Texas, we're about the future of Texas. We've also are trying to touch voting blocks that were maybe not as well addressed in the past, which is the Latino vote and the African American vote. We have really, really tried to make this point in our campaign that whether you're Republican or Democrat, the question is, do you believe our state is in the right direction, is following the right direction? And we're telling people our line is, you need to be independent. You need to set party affiliations aside. If you believe that we're on the right course, you know which side to vote. If you believe in a change, you know where you have to vote. The question is you. There's no question of Republican or Democrat in this race. It has to be about our kids and the future.
All right. Joe Montemayor, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it.